Qualities of Christ. Everything about Christ that is excellent, which is everything, we need to display that in our lives. That's what we call being Christ-like, okay? And we've seen that the number one priority is eternal matters over temporal ones. When we are making decisions, we always need to consider the eternal ramifications of our decisions that we're making. And also having the mind of Christ, thinking like Christ. There was a college student. Every college student knows this. Shania, right? And Sean and others. Knows he needs discipline so that he can stick to his studies for the evening. He's got to get the studying done. So what does he do? What would you do? Okay? You say to yourself, he says to himself, if I fail, I just won't be able to prove myself to my parents. And that was a driving goal to him. I've got to prove to mom and dad that I have what it takes. And he's telling himself that and thinking through that. Now, that's a worthy goal, is it not? If you're in college, especially if they're paying the bill, okay? And you'd want to prove to your parents that you have what it takes. And you're thinking, I cannot let them down. They're paying my bill. Mom's working a second job or a job outside of the home so that I can be in school and focus on my studies. So that's it. I'm going to buckle down and I'm going to study. I've got to. Here's the problem. He may accomplish his studies and stay focused all night long, but he hasn't developed any Christian character in the process. Now, just think about that for a moment. Think, oh, wait a minute, he's a college student. He's studying for a test in biology. What does that have to do with Christian character? Everything in life has to do with Christian character. We are to be Christ-like in everything. Now, let me give you the other side of that. Thinking Christ-like. That was the problem. He wasn't thinking Christ-like. Yes, he was wanting to please his mom and dad and be disciplined in his studies. But here's the other side of that. Lord, right now, I'm tempted to just shut my books, waste time, do something more pleasurable, same student, just a different mindset. I know that if I do, I won't be living to please you, but I'll be living to please myself. I'll be living to please my parents. That was the other reason for getting the good grades. You have done so much for me, Lord. I'm going to settle down and I'm going to do my work tonight. I acknowledge, God, that I have wasted time the last several nights. God, I ask forgiveness for my self-indulgence and my failures to be a good steward of that time that you allowed me to have. Now, see the difference? Huge difference there. That person, his spiritual character was affected by that choice that he made. And just like in an earthly marriage, we don't naturally live for each other, do we? Drop the Hallmark thought, okay? The answer is no, we don't naturally live for each other. In fact, that was part of the fall in Genesis, if you read through that. Even though we initially intend to, that day at the altar when we set our vows, I vow to live for myself and put myself in front of you till death do we part. No, that wasn't our vows. At the altar, we intended to put the other person first for the rest of our lives. But naturally, we go towards the opposite of that. We begin to realize, here's what they call it. After you get married, what is it they call that? Honeymoon's over. right? That first time, and here's what it is every single time. It doesn't matter the details or the circumstances. It doesn't matter. In fact, for us, our honeymoon was over the day we were driving back from our honeymoon. I was driving, and she said something about my driving. And I didn't respond by putting her first. Honeymoon was over. Hey, but every couple gets that. But no matter what the circumstances or the details are, here's what it is at the root. We have stopped putting the other person first, and we are now putting ourselves ahead of everything else. The same thing works in our relationship with Christ. Our heart desires an intimate relationship with Christ, but our heart has been trained to live for someone else. That's not natural, okay? That's why we have to discipline ourselves in this area of self-control that we're looking at tonight. Proverbs 25, verse 28, it says, "A man with no self-control is like a city without walls." A man with no self-control is like a city without walls. Self-control, here's a definition. To take hold of, or to grip, take hold of something. Take hold, grip that time. Get some self-control over that. Whatever it is, you don't have control over it. That means you have no self-control over that. This is something that a boy is lacking, self-control. It's, in fact, I believe it's what separates boys from men. Going from boyhood to manhood has nothing to do with the age, folks. This has a lot to do with it. A boy is a male who has no established order in his life. Okay? So he gets up when he wants, does what he wants, when he wants, eats what he wants, when he wants, how much he wants. No established order. Sits down to play a video game. 4 hours later, he's still playing it because he didn't have anything else to do. No order, no structure at all, no self-control. And without that established order in his life, things are chaotic. He has no schedule. He doesn't own a calendar even because he doesn't need one. There's nothing scheduled. A man is a male who, exercising self-control, brings order to his life. He has a plan and he or she is working their plan. Order. Self-control. This is the goal of Peter's call to us for self-control. To bring order to our lives. Why should we do that? Okay? Number one, God is a God of order, folks. God is a God of order. In fact, the word order means that something is arranged by degree of importance. Versus, now, think about this. Someone who has no order, okay? A boy. Whether he's 6 or 26, a boy who has no order. He sits there and thinks, wow, what do I want to do right now? Did you hear that? What do I want to do? And his life is dictated by whatever his desires are at the moment. What does it look like to have no order? Nothing arranged by degree of importance. That's the important part of this. There's a variety of things that we could do during the day, isn't there? Okay, of course, we can eat. We can go ride a bike. We can sit and read a book. We can watch TV. We can play on a computer, surf the internet. And what if all of these things that you like to do, you did what you wanted to do when you felt like doing it? What would your life be like? Well, you'd be unemployed, probably. your life would be chaotic. I don't feel like doing laundry. You haven't felt like it for 3 weeks, okay? I don't feel like cooking or whatever it is. In the military, they receive their orders, don't they? Those of you that have been in the military, you know this. Life is arranged according to the dictates of your superiors. My daughter-in-law is expecting, and when she was here back in March, I think it was. Yes, Jeremy was at a school in Louisiana, some training there. And he flew back, he got back to Hawaii before she did. She was supposed to fly back April 3rd, which she did. But then he was supposed to be flying out that morning to go to Washington State for more training. And then sometime like in the week or two before that, the Army changed the plans. Go figure, they do that? And he was home for her, okay? And then, and that sort of thing has happened so many times within the last year. He's got training, he doesn't have training. He had two schools coming up for when she's due. Well, now those two schools are done, but he may be going off to another school in October, and who knows what it's going to be. Your life is ordered by the dictates of your superiors. In a courtroom, what happens in a courtroom when you have the judge, the defendant, the plaintiff, their lawyers, the court recorder, and people watching, and people just start talking? What does the judge do? Order in the court. He'll rule that you are out of order. Why? You're not exercising self-control. There's no discipline there. It's chaotic. The same thing, we see that in courtrooms. In other words, certain things must precede others in order for something to function as intended. Okay, we get that? For us to function as God intended, there has to be order. There has to be self-control. Why should we be concerned about self-control? God is a God of order. And He created us with an order. There is order in creation. There is order in the Old Testament ceremonies. Why? Because God was teaching His people that He could not be approached haphazardly. He was to be approached with reverence. If we look at the Old Testament and how they needed to approach God, and how they approached God in the New Testament. And then there's that verse in Hebrews that says we can come boldly to the throne of grace, and we drop the reverence, and now we just refer to the big guy upstairs. What happened? We got things out of order, I think. Ten commandments. Look at those. God first, man second in those commandments. That's the order. When this order is ignored, God first, man second, when that's ignored, we end up with chaos in society. What does Satan do with the things that God has designed and established? He flips them upside down. He goes just the opposite with so many things that we see in our society today. He flips them. Instead of God first, man second, man first, God second. Okay, why else should we be concerned about self-control, adding self-control to our knowledge? Here's the second one. The enemy of order, Satan himself, the enemy of order. In Isaiah 14, you may remember, he was lifted up in pride in heaven still. He got out of order. And that led to the rebellion of others. It affected other people. Angels in this case. He became the God of disorder. Then what did he do? He took it to Adam and Eve. Then they carried it with them. They carried with them the propensity to live disorderly lives. It comes natural, doesn't it, folks? You don't have to teach anyone to be disorderly. That's part of our nature. And we can't miss this point, folks. Disorder in our lives is an attack on the character and purposes of God. Now, that's a pretty stiff statement there. disorder in our lives is an attack on the character of God, on the purposes of God. Say, Pastor, that's strong. How can you say that? Do we have to go back to point number one? God is a God of order. And if we are going to manifest the excellencies of Christ, which is a God of order, we don't have order. We're calling ourselves a Christian, displaying disorder. We are attacking the very character of God and His purposes for our lives. There's an order there. God's people must know and follow the order that God has established for their lives. That requires self-control. Now, let's consider two other things. The penalty of disorder. Now, keep in mind, who are we imitating when we do things orderly and we're under self-control? Who are we imitating? Christ, right. Disorderliness is an imitation of Satan. It's not Christ-like. So those areas in our life, and you know, even as I'm saying this, I'm thinking tomorrow morning, I'm going to be here early so I can clear off my desk. It is disorderly. I know where everything's at. It doesn't look like I would, but I do. Disorderliness is not displaying Christ-likeness. Disorderliness is Satan-like. And there's whatever area of your life it is that is disorderly, okay? Whether it's your desk or, guys, your garage or, ladies, your house, or a closet, or a room, or multiple rooms. Disorderliness. Your house looks like Satan. We could say it that way. Looks like Satan lives there, because God is a God of order, folks. Looks like Satan lives in our garage, maybe, guys, because God is a God of order. Satan's a God of disorder. And so you see, those things... I know it seems kind of funny that our house looks like Satan, but think about it. It's displaying our heart, because God is a God of order. Do we want to be Christ-like or Satan-like? And what does our life reveal that we are like? See, carrying a Bible, going to church doesn't make us Christ-like. Unsaved people do that every week, folks. Okay? It's these excellencies of Christ that we need to be manifesting. So, we need help, don't we? We need help with this. Let's take the last one, number four, the aids to order. A-I-D-S, the aids to order, the helps. Because we need help with this. Here's one that God promotes in His Word. He calls it accountability. Accountability. Don't try to hide the disorder. Don't try to hide the lack of self-control. There's a lot of different self-help groups out there today for different things. Do you know why it's a group? Because there's accountability. The world knows accountability works. It helps. We need accountability. This is God's means of helping man achieve order. 2 Timothy, I told you we would get there. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, it says, "And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will." That passage is talking about someone who's caught in a snare and being recovered by someone else. Accountability. That means your business is my business. And their business is your business. and we see someone struggling or needing help, talking about them to someone else doesn't help them. But we need to go help them ourselves. Offer to help. They can, you know what? You could help them by asking them to help you. If you know someone struggling with reading their Bible, we'll just keep it simple. We could apply this in anything. You know they're struggling reading their Bible. You can just go to them and say, you know what? I was wondering if you could help me making sure that I read my Bible every day. Could we be accountability partners? That would be a real help to me. And it will be. And you can help each other that way. Remember what Cain said to God in the Garden of Eden? God came to him after Abel had been killed and he said, Cain, where's your brother? Remember what he said? Am I my brother's keeper? Yes. Galatians 6, 1 and 2. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Yes, we are our brother's keeper. We have that responsibility. Here's my last thoughts here for this tonight. Our society, folks, has rejected God order. It scorns self-control. Personal responsibility, that's going out the window if it's not already gone. But what is even more troubling is that it has infected the church as well. How so? Self-control. The lack of self-control. We can see it in our churches. It's called permissive parenting. Man, parent, I am so glad. The empty nest, I love it. I love it. Because the job of parenting is so much easier after they're gone. It is hard work. If you're going to parent, you can be a parent without parenting. But parenting, that's hard work. Permissive parenting is just kind of feed them, clothe them, give them some advice once in a while if they ask. Don't rock the boat too much. Keep them from getting arrested. Whew, got them through the teen years. All right, we're done. That's permissive parenting. You haven't noticed that parent didn't say anything about teaching them anything. Permissiveness. Parents who tolerate behaviors that promote self-indulgence. Here's what I mean. These are some examples of permissive parenting. Hours of TV. Video games. Hours of internet. Purposeless hanging out with friends for no purpose. Disrespectful body language and disrespectful words. Sloppiness in dress. Sloppiness in living environments. You know what that is, don't you? Messy bedroom. Tolerating that lack of order, it sometimes reveals the parents' own disorderliness too, though. All right. Here's another way it's crept into the church. Lack of self-control. Maxed out credit cards. Lack of self-control. Self-control means, no, I don't need it today. I'll wait till I have it. The cash for it. Okay? Laziness. Dysfunctional marriages. That's almost the same as parenting, folks. You can't be permissive in your marriage. Saying I do, the work just begins right there. It takes intentional work in a marriage. Lack of self-control in the church in the form of sensuality in language, in dress, in our entertainment. Folks, we're not talking about the world here. We're just talking about what's going on in the church or in our homes, because we are the church. Unfaithful employees, disrespect to authority. That's not God's order. All of these show the disorderliness of God's people. And the root problem, as we've already discussed, most are living for self and not for Christ. For themselves and not for Christ on Sunday. Because something came up that they would rather be doing than the rest of the week. And the rest of the week at work and in their home, it's just all disorderliness. Even though they may clean themselves up and go to church on Sunday and look like they got it together. But you wouldn't invite anyone into your home, perhaps because of the disorderliness. What do? We repent and cultivate, back to our farming analogy here, cultivate self-control. We repent and then we start planting the seeds for self-control. That is accountability. Accountability. We need that. So let's stop there for tonight and go to our prayer groups. Thank you so much.